Good morning. First, I will tell you the story of how I came to pick out these two images that you see on the screens. The one on this side shows a doctor who is using a stethoscope on a dolly baby that the little girl has brought with her to the doctor's office. And he's doing that in anticipation of not being a fearful person to the little girl. On the other side over here, I see a man lying in a field somewhere with just enjoying the day with his son snuggling up against him and a dog snuggling up against the son. So I really think that either one of these Norman Rockwell pictures is of a day gone by. It was the kind of happiness that none of us experience much. And I don't know about you, but I can tell you that as a kid, I did not have a snuggly father or a snuggly dog. My healing and happiness story is easy and simple to tell. After retiring from a stressful job as director of graduate and continuing medical education at a teaching hospital in Virginia, I was warned by my doctor that unless I lost 20 pounds and kept it off and started to exercise on a regular basis, I could not expect to have a long life. The year before, I had been diagnosed as pre-hypertensive and pre-diabetic. Neither one a diagnosis that is fun or full of happiness. So soon after my retirement, I decided I would lose those pounds and did so by practicing Qigong with Maxine Forster Gunther in the Earth Room here at UUCNC. Now, for those of you who have not been introduced to Qigong, it is the opposite of an exercise where the motto is no pain, no gain. It's fun to do. You're not stressing your body as you're doing it. You shouldn't feel sore the next day or the day after. And yet, there's an incredible ability by deep relaxation, which is wonderfully useful in enhancing the immune system, but also in the deep relaxation helps with mobility. So that, for example, let me just show you. It's only been, here, I'm going to get tied up in this, sorry. It's only been in the last 3 years, I'm now 79, that I could easily do gathering from the earth with a deep squat like that. And the way it happened was simply practicing and playing with it and never getting sore. So the practice of Qigong is aligning breath, graceful movement, mental focus, and self-applied massage, and balancing your life. Qi refers to life force or breath. Gong refers to practice or cultivation. Qigong was developed in ancient China well before the Common Era. From a Western medicine perspective, it achieves what's called the relaxation response, enhancing the immune system, enhancing feelings of vitality, and stress reduction. So taking lessons from Maxine and practicing Qigong almost every day over 3 years, I lost those 20 pounds and I kept them off. I was so happy practicing Qigong that I wanted to share it with others, and Maxine, as my mentor, encouraged me to get my national teacher accreditation. I decided to retire from teaching Qigong not long ago, but I'm practicing it on a regular basis, and actually one of my students liked Qigong so much that he is now getting National Teacher Certification and teaching it in the community room next door on Thursday evenings. So we have options for people who are available in the daytime with Maxine, and if you're available on Thursday evenings, you could practice with Jim Tella as well. So here's the story of my cancer journey, which started early last summer with a visit to my primary care doctor, who, feeling uncertain about his diagnosis of a mild stomach ache, referred me to a gastroenterologist for an upper GI endoscopy. The endoscopy documented that I had very early stage stomach cancer. Because the cancer was caught so early, my prognosis after chemotherapy is that there is now less than a 50% chance of cancer returning within the current calendar year, and a rapidly diminishing likelihood of return of the cancer in future years. I now feel very lucky that the cancer was diagnosed so early, also very fortunate to have talented doctors. Most important to me was the enthusiastic support of my family, friends, and my wife, Liz Dean. Liz kept me company at appointments and asked penetrating and significant questions of the practitioner. And for any of you who are dealing with any serious situation with doctors, I highly recommend borrowing Liz or somebody as smart as she is to go with you. I also believe that practicing Qigong along the way helped me to feel both more centered and balanced, free of pain, and able to navigate my cancer journey. Now I want to return to what I learned about happiness from my father, who was not so very snuggly. He was an idealist who was a democratic socialist and a follower of Norman Thomas, the Presbyterian minister and founder of the American Civil Liberties Union, who ran for president of the United States six times in the last century. As a pacifist, my father's idea of happiness was to demonstrate with picket signs in front of the White House in 1951 with me, his wife Betty, and my sisters Betty Ann and Mary Lou. They're younger than me. We were demonstrating against nuclear testing because it polluted the Earth's atmosphere. I was 12 years old and in the seventh grade and loved picketing the White House for a just cause with my family. That for me was happiness. A few months later, when the public high school I attended excused all the 7th through 12th graders from class to go to the gym to see a live video the first ever live televising of a nuclear testing, I complained that it was a shame that this was going on, and of course I got called a communist by several of my classmates. My dad had gone to the College of Worcester in Ohio and was a member of the Congressional Club, where there was a debating society which worked with rules of the House of Representatives. And the Congressional Club invited Norman Thomas, the Democratic Socialist presidential candidate, to speak on campus. The Presbyterian College president would not allow Norman Thomas to speak on campus, so the high school auditorium was rented and it was packed to the gills with students, faculty, and townspeople. My dad and other members of the Congressional Club were threatened with expulsion, a threat never acted on. And at the University of North Carolina in graduate school, I participated happily in a demonstration, and many demonstrations, against racial segregation of restaurants and against an unconstitutional law that the General Assembly had passed banning communists from speaking on the UNC campus. I became the first president of the Chapel Hill, North Carolina chapter of the Students for a Democratic Society. I was called a communist by one of the North Carolina senators, which for me was a joke, but it was no joke at all that I received a postcard in a primitive scroll addressed to my home and stating, "We do not need your body in the state of North Carolina in any way, shape, or form." My father taught me that happiness can be found working against racism and nuclear war, for religious freedom, the First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech, for women's rights and world peace. And so far as I know, Norman Rockwell never created a painting of workers picketing a company to form a labor union. Our American Constitution, in Benjamin Franklin's famous saying, only gives people the right to pursue happiness. You have to catch it for yourself. But in our lifetime, there have been growing efforts to institutionalize the importance of happiness. In 1972, a British journalist for the Financial Times was told by the King of Bhutan that, and this is just wonderful, gross national happiness is more important than gross national product. And I think that's just a great thought, and it set in a number of things in motion. In 2011, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution that happiness toward a holistic approach to development was the resolution, which called on nations to measure the happiness and well-being of their people as a fundamental goal. And they were following in the path of the King of Bhutan, which is snuggled up against the mountains in the Himalaya Mountains and bordering on India. And the constitution there has a formula for measuring annual happiness, which I think was a first. The first World Happiness Report was issued in 2012 based on surveys conducted by the Gallup poll with six key variables used to support the measurement of happiness: income, healthy life expectancy, social support, freedom, trust, and generosity. This World Happiness Report for 2018 shows Finland as the happiest nation, with Norway, Denmark, Iceland, and Switzerland not far behind, and USA being number 18 and dropping on the scale. But it doesn't take a sociologist with a PhD to know that the choice of questions asked can easily be challenged as biased on one's values, based on one's values and definition of happiness. In many more ways, I recommend to you, rather than the World Happiness Report, the survey, a movie called The Happy Movie. How many of you have seen The Happy Movie? I'd like to see a show of hands. There are a few people here who have seen it. It's directed by Roko Belek and featuring a journey to explore human happiness through interviews with people from all walks of life in 14 countries, weaving in the latest from happiness psychology, which is a new movement in the last 30 years within the field of psychology. I highly recommend this movie, which is easily available on the internet. Just use your browser as an inspiration and a powerful statement that you don't have to be wealthy to be happy. The larger question America is facing today is not happiness. It is how we can make this a more fair and equitable society without racial discrimination or discrimination against women and LGBTQ people, against immigrants. Can we provide Medicare for all and restore a democracy by making it easier to vote? Can we find happiness by supporting the cause? And finally, civility, I would say, fairness, respect, openness, caring about the health and welfare of the poorest and weakest in our society are the values that, to me, are all more important than happiness. But at this juncture, I want to close by saying that there's a benefit to Qigong that I did not mention, and that is it slows down and in some instances reverses some of the aging processes so that you can increase your balance with Qigong practice. You can become more flexible. You can develop greater attention span. You can do lots of things that really, in the intention of the Chinese who invented this thing, really reverse some of what's there in growing older. And with the grandchild that I have and another one on the way, that for me is also a very major source of happiness. Thank you.
Thank you. Joel and Louise. So beautiful. So Glennon Doyle Melton offers this advice. Here's the truth I've learned. You're not supposed to be happy all the time. Life hurts and it's hard. Not because you're doing it wrong, because it hurts for everybody. Don't avoid the pain. Don't numb it. Don't run from it. Pain is not a hot potato. Pain is a traveling professor. All the wisdom and courage you need to become the person you are meant to be is inside your pain. Be still with it. Let this pain come, let it go, let it leave you with the fuel you'll burn to get your work done on this earth. Good advice. It seems to me that talk of healing and happiness will not make any sense unless we first speak of the pain, of the hurt, the wounds, the scar tissue that demands to be eased, healed, if at all possible. It is painfully apparent that not all wounds are the same, and not all wounds can be healed. Our mortality, that ever-present limitation, tells us we might not make it next time. This is why using the pain as fuel for the work that is ours to do makes total sense to me. Everything is fuel for that fire. When we stop running from it and feel it, when we face it and use it, we and the world we know are transformed. These terms might be ugly, but pretending they are not never really works either. You see, cancer is ugly. Disease is ugly. Heartbreak, hate, and neglect are ugly. The list of the ugly which demands healing is longer than this hour. Yet it is also our sacred text, our lament, and our interface with all that is holy. Sometimes it seems to me that happiness does not exist without a challenge to it. I do know that without the challenge, healing care cannot do its beautiful job. Just last week, I had a 24-hour virus that laid me flat. Once I was feeling like myself again, I noticed a lovely new light feeling. I was genuinely glad to be alive. Have you ever felt like that? The world around me seemed brighter, more beautiful than it had just a few days earlier. What was that about? It raised this troubling question: do I need to be sick in order to enjoy feeling well? Do we need to earn the privilege of good health occasionally? I hope not, but I suspect otherwise. The fact is that life's usual trajectory means that we will someday face illness and loss of our body's capacity. Every one of us is only temporarily able-bodied. These Norman Rockwell images remind me that healthcare and healing are privileges not enjoyed by the global majority. They represent a white and financially secure world unfamiliar to many people of color and those who live in grinding poverty. Those chronic stresses create both heart and body illness that takes more than an individual commitment for a personal healing and happiness. We can each do just so much when pitted against that kind of systemic failure. I want to share a few lines from a poem by Adam Lawrence Dyer titled Healing. Don't speak to me of healing racism or wounded souls or the painful hurt until you are willing to feel the scars on my great-great-grandmother Laurie's back. Don't speak to me of values or justice or righting wrongs until you are able to feel the heartache of my great-grandfather Graham, whose father may have been his master. Don't speak to me of equity or opportunity or the common good until you are able to hear the fear from my grandmother May as the only black woman in her college. pain you're trying to heal has no real name. This pain you speak of has no story. It's anonymous, vague, and empty. Don't speak to me of healing, for I heal the second I am ripped apart. My wounds self-suture, and like the clever creature I am, I just grow new legs to outrun the pain ever faster. It is something I've had to practice for generations that feel like an eternity. So please don't speak to me of healing, because you cannot know what healing means until you know the hurt. I cannot pretend to know the pain Adam describes, but I know that it matters that I listen to it. I listen to the stories of that pain. There is cross-generational pain we must bear and try to understand better. Stories of these traumas will open our hearts to another's experience and allow us to share that pain. Sharing the burden of a history some of us have the privilege of being able to ignore really matters if we are ever to change the system that created it. For all of us, no matter who we are, there is childhood pain and trauma we've experienced long before we have words to describe it. That pain and trauma still shapes and informs our set point for experiencing happiness on any given day. Dr. Nadine Burks writes that the body remembers. The tiny body really remembers. While adults who experience something traumatic are often capable of rewiring their stress response over time, the severity and stubbornness of the effects of trauma on children are more potent. The difference between adaptive and maladaptive reactions is all about the when. When little children are exposed over and over again to toxic stress, it can cause a wide range of problems immediately. Things like obesity and growth failure and ADHD, and an even wider range over time. Their systems are so in flux and so vulnerable. The good news is that the damage done to children because of toxic stress doesn't have to be permanent. Dr. Harris has found that a combination of sleep, improved sleep and mental health services and healthy relationships, exercise, improved nutrition and mindfulness training were critical for healing. But there's another even simpler thing that really matters. The key to keeping a tolerable stress response from tipping over into that toxic stress zone is the presence of a buffering adult to adequately mitigate the impact of that stress. Just as the presence of a buffering adult can help a child through stress and trauma, it is true that a friend or two to accompany us when we face illness is incredibly important for adults too. Every day, we build relationships, we nurture our families, and create a caring community because to be truly happy, we need one another. It's not that we can't be alone sometimes, but constant isolation hurts us in several ways. In isolation, it is true that help may not be there when we need it, but it's also true that we will not have the opportunity to be of help to others. Giving of ourselves, caring for others, is healing. Exchanges of care, no matter how small, helps everyone, giver and receiver alike. The experts tell us that to be truly happy, we must care for one another. We must practice compassion in our everyday lives. So when I sent a note on that terrible day to Liz Dean that I was feeling too sick to meet my obligations at WAGO, her response was kind and caring, and I immediately felt a little better. She could have been upset that I was reneging on my commitment, maybe she was even, but she didn't show it. What she expressed was unmitigated kindness, and that kindness broke through my professional crust of competence or pride or whatever it was, and let me just be sick for a day. There is so much we cannot be in control of. Illness comes, bodies wear out, healing and health may not look like what we expected of it. And always there's a beauty, larger and more wondrous than we can ever grasp. It is available to us if we just look for it, just allow ourselves to feel it and know that it is there for us. The funny thing is that the search for happiness is never in vain. Happiness is there for us in abundance. It was there always and will be there if we accept and take responsibility for our part in creating it. It will be there if we tend to all the keys to accessing it. Practices that teach us to pay attention, to stay in the here and now, owning the pain and letting it transform us, giving it time, showing compassion for others and ourselves. All these allow happiness to emerge. Looking for the big picture, the beauty and truth that transcends this moment reminds us that happiness is there. It exists, and it is every single person's birthright. On any given Sunday, we have in our midst someone who is facing some terrible news, and someone who is celebrating a great and unannounced joy. There are those who are struggling to feel anything at all, and those who are overwhelmed by feeling. May all these joys and sorrows know the love of this caring community. May our efforts to create love and justice open doors to happiness for those we may never meet. May we be an overflowing container for healing and hope. May we hold the door open for happiness today.